September is National Prostate Cancer Awareness Month, and although strides have been made in the fight against prostate cancer, it remains the most commonly diagnosed cancer and the second leading cause of cancer deaths in men. In fact, more than 240,000 men will be diagnosed with prostate cancer this year alone in this country. But there is help, and that's why early diagnosis and treatment is so essential to prevent the fatal consequences of the disease. Well, joining me this morning to help us understand prostate cancer and what can be done about it is Dr. Rakesh Khanna, Assistant Professor of Urology at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Khanna. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
So we know that prostate cancer can be a killer, but it's often a silent one. So who is most at risk for this disease?
That's a good question. Now, when we look at the risk factors for prostate cancer, there's a couple that are very well established, and those basically include advanced age. That means basically the older men get, the higher likelihood they're going to have prostate cancer. Then there's also the ethnic background that also plays a significant role. Specifically, African American men are at a higher risk of having prostate cancer, and if they have prostate cancer, they're at a higher risk of having a more aggressive prostate cancer. We don't know exactly why that's the case, but that is an association we found. The other issue is a family history. If you have a relative, a father, brother, child who's had prostate cancer at an early age, so not at an elderly age, but at an early age, below 65, you're also at an elevated risk of having prostate cancer. And your risk actually increases depending on the number of relatives who've had the prostate cancer. So if you've had two or more relatives affected, you're at a higher risk than if you've had one relative.
So given those factors, what are the recommendations for screening?
That is a great question, and it's a very confusing question. And actually, if you look at different organizations, the guidelines that different organizations recommend vary considerably. And the reason this is the case is because it goes back to prostate cancer. When we look at prostate cancer, as I was saying, it's mostly found in elderly people. On top of that, it's actually, for the most part, it's a very slow-growing cancer. When we screen right now, we can find prostate cancer, but unfortunately, we can't tell which are the more aggressive cancers versus which are the more benign tumors. So getting back, if we screen elderly people for prostate cancer and we find a prostate cancer, we don't know if this was a cancer that was actually going to be symptomatic for them in the first place.
Meaning that it won't necessarily lead to all the negative consequences and even death, for example.
Exactly. And this is where one of the big areas of research is going on in prostate cancer. So can we identify which cancers are the potentially the more aggressive cancers? Unfortunately, right now we can't. So general guidelines, what a few organizations will recommend is basically starting at the age of 50, if you have no risk factors, you should talk to your doctor, do I need to get screened for prostate cancer? Have the discussion. If you do have risk factors, if you're African American, if you had a first degree relative who's had prostate cancer, you should probably get screened at 45. If you're even higher risk of prostate cancer, meaning you've had two first degree relatives who've had prostate cancer, you should probably get screened at 40.
So, basically what you're saying is it's really an individual decision along with your own doctor, and it's based on your own history and who you are. You can't make these kinds of blanket recommendations.
Exactly. And one of the things I don't want people to associate is not necessarily just the age either. So, for example, I use an example where 50 as the age to start screening for prostate cancer. Now, if you're basically, again, this is a discussion you have with your doctor, your primary care doctor or your urologist, but if you're, let's say, 50 and you find you have a lot of other health problems, as I said, prostate cancer is a very slow-growing disease, then maybe you don't need to be screened for it at that age.
Because these other diseases take more precedence, you're saying. You need to address those first.
Exactly. So that's what, it's a complicated discussion. Have it with your doctor. You don't have to decide in one visit, okay, look, I came here, I need to get screened or not. Take the time, speak to them, look at the pros and the cons. Again, the major issue with screening is if I find a prostate cancer, I still don't know if this cancer is going to be a serious cancer for you.
And it's interesting because that obviously then reflects on the kinds of treatment, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, that you then undertake should you get a positive result of the screening. Mm-hmm. But let's get back to the screening for a second. What are the types of tests that are involved in a screening?
Mm-hmm. So it's important to note that screening involves two aspects. It's not one, it's two. So the first issue is a digital rectal examination. This is a test where basically the physician inserts a finger into the rectum and he feels the prostate. The idea we're feeling for any lumps or bumps, any asymmetrical or abnormal areas of the prostate. That's the first thing. The second issue is the blood test. The blood test is called PSA, prostate-specific antigen. PSA is actually a molecule or a protein actually produced by the prostate gland. And normally in the blood, it's actually in very low levels. But if there's prostate diseases, not just prostate cancer, but prostate diseases, whether it's enlargement of the prostate, infections of the prostate, or any manipulations, can all cause the PSA to go up. Those two tests, the PSA and the DRE, constitute screening for prostate cancer. The reason we use both is because together, their sensitivity to pick up prostate cancer is better than each one individually. So again, just to clarify, what I mean by that is with the digital examination, you'll pick up some cancers that would have had a normal PSA. And with PSA, you'll pick up a lot of cancers that would have had a normal digital rectal examination.
Well, hold that thought. We're going to come back and talk a lot more about this. But we're going to have to take a short break right now. We'll be right back, so please stay right there. I'm Linda Cohen. This is HealthLink on Air, FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR. Back to HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen along with my guest, Dr. Rakesh Khanna, and we're talking about prostate cancer. Now, before the break, I think what came up was the whole controversy surrounding screening and the confusion, because I think at one point there was all of this kind of people jumping on a bandwagon and saying, you must get screened because if you don't get screened, this can kill you, basically. And now there's a little bit of a different thought based on what you said, that we don't really know which of these cancers can be life-threatening and which could just, you could basically outlive. So tell us again what your thoughts are in terms of the age range and what to do.
So again, screening is very controversial. Different organizations, they recommend different protocols, but I think most urologists will actually feel that screening is beneficial. The important thing is we just have to know who to screen. We have to screen the right person. So what most urologists will do and what they'll recommend is that if you're 50 years old or if you're 45 or 40 with risk factors, they will recommend an annual PSA, which is a blood test, and a digital rectal examination up until the age of 75. That's pretty much the standard.
Now, why would you cut it off at 75?
So one of the things actually what I was wanted to mention is most people will stop at 75. But again, what I said earlier is it, again, goes back to also, are you a healthy 75 or are you an unhealthy 75? If you're a healthy 75-year-old male, then you'll probably continue. You'll maybe recommend screening even for a couple more years afterwards. Because all of this has to do with, again, most prostate cancers are very slow growing. Most men, if I biopsy their prostates, I will find some evidence of prostate cancer at 75. But the vast majority of them will not be symptomatic from that prostate cancer.
So you're saying, in a way, prostate cancer is almost ubiquitous. I mean, it basically comes with aging. And if, in many cases, if it's so slow growing, the person basically outlives, I mean, the cancer doesn't affect them during their lifespan.
Right. So let's look at it another way. I'll give you some numbers. If I took a gentleman over 70 and I biopsied their prostate, microscopically I would find evidence of prostate cancer in about 50 to 75% of those individuals. If you take those individuals and you ask them which one actually would have symptoms of prostate cancer, so they actually present with symptoms, you're now down to about maybe 10 to 15%. And then if you take the people who actually die of prostate cancer, you're actually down to about 3%. So you start off with a very big number, and you're now down to a very small number. And again, the issue with screening is we can't tell which is that 3%.
So it seems to me that the key here, and just to reiterate what you've been saying, is it's very much an individual, based on individual case, and it really is essential that you have these conversations with your physician throughout your life, and those decisions have to be made based on your own circumstance and
exactly.
your own health.
Exactly.
But it's important to have the conversation and be aware of the screening
as, exactly.
as potentially helpful.
Exactly.
It's interesting, though, but you were talking about being symptomatic, and yet I understood a lot of the times it's asymptomatic, the existence of prostate cancer. So what if you were going to have symptoms, what kind of symptoms would you be having?
So the one thing is, ever since this PSA has come out, the screening has started, actually prostate cancer has gone from being a symptomatic cancer to the most oftenly it's detected in an asymptomatic fashion through screening. Almost 70% of the cancers are picked up asymptomatically nowadays. Rarely we will see symptoms. Most of the time those will include difficulties urinating, meaning weak stream, hesitancy. Now, unfortunately, it's hard to tell if that's from prostate cancer or just having an enlarged prostate. And as men get older, their prostates will get bigger. And even the PSA, it's hard to distinguish which one of those two processes is going on. The other issue is you can also have some blood in the urine. It's rare, but also in cases of more advanced prostate cancer, if it's spread to the bones, you can have bone pain. But again, with the PSA, the digital rectal examination, we're seeing much fewer occurrences of these type of symptoms.
I guess I'm just mentioning that if, in fact, you were a person who may not have had the opportunity for a screening, you know, if you and you had these symptoms, obviously these are flags or red flags for you to go and see your doctor.
Agreed.
Okay. Let's continue in talking a little bit about, let's say you've been diagnosed now, and either through the combination of the screening and the PSA and the digital rectal exam, what happens then? Let's say you get a positive score or a positive high PSA. What goes on after that? What's the next step?
So the first thing, your doctor will have to look at the PSA value and say, is this, you know, we think that there's a probability that this is from prostate cancer or not, because PSA can be affected by other processes. So that's the first value. If your doctor feels that the PSA is most likely, or there's a good chance that this could be secondary to prostate cancer, then you need to establish a diagnosis. And the diagnosis is established by a biopsy.
Which is taking a sample of the prostate.
Yes. And most of the times, the way most people do it is they do it under ultrasound. They insert a probe into the rectum, and they take between 10 to 12 biopsy samples of the prostate. They send it to the pathologist, who basically will look at it under the microscope and will assign a score to it. And based on the score, that will tell what type of prostate cancer, what grade of prostate cancer you have.
And that's an important distinction, because what you said earlier, I think, is the key. It'll tell you what grade, but at this point doesn't tell you how aggressive the type, the cell type is.
The screening will not tell you how aggressive, but when you get the biopsy, the higher the grade, the more aggressive the cancer.
Oh, so at that point you know.
Yes. Okay. Now you start to know a little bit about the cancer. You start to know about how diffuse is the cancer based on the number of cores are involved, how aggressive the cancer is. Along with the biopsy from the PSA and the digital rectal examination, we can then establish what risk you are for having prostate cancer. And that's how a lot of treatments now are being decided, based on risk. So we try to classify patients now as either low risk, intermediate risk, and high risk. And that risk classification, again, is based on your PSA, your digital rectal examination, and your biopsy results.
So let's talk about what you would do then. I mean, obviously, it's going to depend on the person's age, their overall health, all those other kinds of things. But what are the kinds of treatments that are out there? I mean, I hear all the time, especially with older people, they say, well, let's just use watchful waiting. So what is that?
So first of all, I don't like that word, watchful waiting. It basically has a very negative connotation, because it implies we're not doing anything. That's wrong. Nowadays, the newer terminology that we're using is something called active surveillance. Active surveillance is basically a process is where we surveil you with PSAs, digital rectal examination, and a follow-up biopsy with the idea of looking as, has the cancer progressed? Keep in mind what I said before. The vast majority of men will have prostate cancer. The vast majority of men will not die from prostate cancer. So the advantage of this treatment option is we potentially avoid putting you through the risks of surgery, radiation therapy, for treating a cancer which you would not have otherwise known about. That's the big plus of that treatment option.
Makes a lot of sense. What about surgery? So I think surgery is the one that you hear about most of the time. What are the options for surgery?
So again, when we talk about surgery, we're looking at the risk classification initially. Low risk, intermediate, high risk. Surgery basically involves taking out the prostate and the seminal vesicles. And then what we do is we attach the bladder back to the urethra, which is a tube that connects the urine to the outside. The major risk from the surgery is the risk of erectile dysfunction, incontinence. Now, with newer techniques, robotic techniques, open surgery, the risks of these have actually gone down quite a bit.
I understand, but they do, even in the open, when they actually do an open procedure, they are what they call nerve-sparing surgeries where they can prevent maybe the negative consequences that you described.
Exactly. So one of the things I just want to mention, when we talk about open surgery versus robotic surgery, this is a common thing that's brought up, and somebody will ask you, what's better? Well, when you're looking at incontinence rates, erectile dysfunction rates, cancer control rates, there's no difference between both. When you look at short-term outcomes, blood loss, recovery, studies have shown that the robotic surgery is better. But again, when you're looking at the long-term values, and the long-terms are what's important, there is no difference.
Let's get on to, so surgery obviously is a viable and very effective treatment. What does radiation do? Is that effective, and why would they choose it? We're kind of running out of time, So I want to make sure we cover that.
So radiation, surgery are both effective for localized prostate cancer. Unfortunately, both have different side effects. And actually, the way I look about it, for lack of a better term, you pick your poison. Okay? With radiation therapy, you have a risk of bleeding. You have also a risk of erectile dysfunction, but it's later onset rather than earlier. And there's also a little bit risk of incontinence as well.
It seems like, though, there are a lot of opportunities and, you know, treatment options. And it's the kind of thing, again, that you need to discuss with your own physician and figure out what's best for you. And I understand there are some new ones coming down the pike. We might have to have you back to talk about those. Well, Dr. Rakesh Khanna, thank you so much, Assistant Professor of Urology at Upstate Medical University. Thanks for coming in and sharing all this information with us. Again, with Prostate Cancer Awareness Month in September, it's really important that we stay on top of this. Well, we have to take a short break. We'll be right back, so please stay right there. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is HealthLink on Air, FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR.